The Initial Reaction Podcast. We are complying with all FAA regulations, we swear. I'm J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers.
True story, at least Twitter says it is, that United updated its app today, and it said it updated the drag and drop feature.
Are you serious? No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Pictures on Twitter, that's what it says.
There is no way that is accurate. There's no way. That's one of those things that you see on Twitter, and initially you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it, that's too perfect. And then you really think about it. You have to do this now. You can't trust anything you see at first glance. Even, I would argue, not to be paranoid or anything, but even I would argue mainstream news, you have to take everything with just a little bit of perspective and grain of salt. You need to say to yourself, okay, that looks really, really bad, but there has to be more to the story. And I'm not referring to the airline incident at all, but like, there's nothing you can trust at first glance anymore. Am I right?
Yep, no, I believe you 1,000%, and this thing that I saw and lots of other people have pointed out probably would have been really easy to fake. So,
oh, 100%.
There's a chance, but nonetheless, if true, spectacular.
It, totally great. A great confluence of events, just like us. And you maybe can't trust us either, but we do try to entertain you a little bit as we talk about the Wisconsin sports scene, prep sports. If there were any prep sports, we could talk about them this week. But spring weather has pretty much destroyed the schedule. Every team has like a game on the docket at this point that they've played. It's pretty gross in southeastern Wisconsin.
And not much is better than being up north and in the northwoods of Wisconsin. But when it comes to spring weather and spring sports, that is the one thing that is better than being up north, because they got about 4 inches of snow. So,
yeah, good luck playing baseball in the snowbanks of northwoods, Wisconsin. It is not pretty. And you wonder why those teams struggle when they get to the state tournament, at least in the summer ball state tournament, because they don't get a chance to play. They get like 16 games out of the year. Everybody else gets to play double that, and that's the summer baseball, but it's not fair, man. It stinks to be a tennis player in one of the Northwoods schools. It's not fair.
Yeah, I remember in high school, we would start off playing tennis in the spring with sweatshirts and jackets on, and we would end
mostly
shirtless just playing on the court. So,
wait, you played You played tennis in high school, is that right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Did I know that?
Varsity letter.
No way! I have a varsity letter playing tennis in high school.
Oh, yeah.
We should play tennis! It really does, because, I had to work for it. I was extremely lazy and extremely not athletic, so it took a little while to build myself up for that, but, you know, I still have a little bit of game when it comes to tennis. The kids, true story, on the school bus, that like, 6th and 7th graders would taunt us driving by the tennis courts. Like, really? The 6th and 7th graders are taunting us? I guess tennis wasn't cool. I don't know.
Oh, that's funny. No, it was cool enough. Maybe it's just you weren't cool. I never had a problem.
I definitely wasn't cool, but I thought I surrounded myself with enough athletic people to blend in. Apparently not. I don't know. We're going to play tennis sometime. We're not going to play hockey because you're better than me at that, and I don't want to lose, but we are going to talk a little more hockey on this podcast. I got a chance to catch up with Brianna Decker. She's from Dousman. She's a member of the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team. They've been in the news a lot lately for, A, the standoff they had with USA Hockey attempting to get better working conditions, basically, better wages, better a lot of things, maternity leave, the opportunity to play more games, lots of stuff. And they basically got what they wanted, and then they said that they were not going to play in the World Championships until they did get what they want. They got that. They went on to win the World Championships. They beat Canada in overtime in the championship game in a thriller. It was great. So I talked to her about all that stuff. She's obviously right in the middle of that. She did score the first goal at the World Championships in pool play, also against Canada. So that was an exciting moment for her. She went to high school in Minnesota, but obviously keeps ties locally and has been a part of the women's national team for a few years now. Got a silver medal in the last Olympics and will be playing in the next one, I presume.
Nice. Looking forward to that. I always love the rivalry of Minnesota-Wisconsin hockey relations, like with Phil Kessel being labeled like the ultimate traitor for growing up Madison and going to Minnesota. I love it.
I didn't even know that was a thing with Phil Kessel. I know that name, but I know so little about hockey.
JR, come on.
Well, the thing is, Wisconsin, University of, does not have many Wisconsin high school players on their roster, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. They have virtually none.
No, I wouldn't say it's none. There's
I said virtually none.
Four to five. Yeah, 4 to 5 out of 25.
That's a few more than I guess I even would have thought. I'm not talking about this year per se. I'm talking about in general. And I did talk to Brianna a little bit too about Wisconsin hockey on the girls' side, because thus far, it's still what I would call a fledgling sport. There isn't elite level participation. If you are really phenomenal at it, like Brianna was, you're going to go out of state, play at a prep school. That she went to Minnesota, played at a prep school. So, I don't know if we're quite at the point where we're going to see elite level players coming up through Wisconsin's ranks on the girls' side. And there's a couple on the boys' side, but not many. So, so I asked her about that as well. It was pretty good. I enjoyed chatting with her.
Yeah, very nice.
And, we also are going to talk about the Brewers, who are 1 week into their season and looking fabulous, and the Bucks, who are, in fact, looking fabulous, at least from time to time. And, let's start there, because you know a lot about the Bucks. You're a big Bucks guy, am I right?
Huge. Huge.
Yeah, they are,
I mean, it's certainly more fun to follow them this year. I mean, the past few years have been fun. I think this is only the second winning season they've had in the last 9 years. So, I mean, this is already just one of the better seasons that they've had. And they've shown promise this year. It's different than other seasons when you had Charlie Bell and Dan Gazzarich on your team. And you're saying, like, what are we looking forward to here? Like, why are we doing this? But this one, not only are they better, but it also gives you more hope, even more for the future. So, no, I've been into it this year. I've definitely watched more games and covered more stories and done more than I have in the past.
Dan Gazzarich on the short list of worst contracts in Wisconsin sports history.
He's up there.
And at least he was a decent guy. I mean, they've had some, you know, through this long spell of non-winning, I guess you could call it, they've had some real just forgettable basketball players, and so it's nice to see them back on the map. They've got a guy who's going to get votes in the MVP voting, not necessarily a first place vote, but he's going to be in the mix. Actually, I don't even know how the NBA does their voting. Do they rank like top five as they do in other sports, or do they primarily just
the talk with Giannis is that any other year he would be getting MVP votes, like as in first place MVP votes. And then also the other talk with Giannis is that he will likely be on the big thing for the NBA is the All-Pro team. So much like the NFL does, but big thing, you know, first team All-Pro, second or All-NBA, I think it's called. I'm sorry. You know, so there's the first five, second five, third five, and it looks like Giannis is probably going to be somewhere in that second, probably on the second team, which is pretty outstanding because you're basically just admitting or realizing that you have a top 10 player in the NBA, and I'm sure a lot of us think that he's going to be top five and even top one, two, or three someday.
Top 10 in jersey sales, as we learned on Tuesday as we record this. But so I realize I should have researched this a little bit, but does the All-NBA team work? Something works this way where they have true positions. They got two guards, two forwards, and a center. Is that the All-Star starting lineup, or is that the All-NBA team? Because if so, that could stand in his way if he's listed as, say, a power forward when there's that guy in Cleveland who could stand in his way, LeBron, whom I'm also assuming will be a power forward, I guess. See, the positions have sort of dissolved over the last few years, so that's not quite the way that I would want it structured. But I don't know. Do you know? Does the All-NBA choose?
Well, I know this All-Star game was front court, back court, so...
Okay.
And even then, I think that's just how you voted. I don't even know if that's how they were announced as starters or anything like that. So.
Okay. All right. Well, in any event, you're right. He'll be first team, second team, something along those lines. Probably second team, all NBA. Certainly you're going to have to make room for James Harden and Russell Westbrook, who are the two front runners for the MVP award, and LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard, who are 3 and 4 in the MVP's discussion. So.
And a little guy named Steph, probably.
Oh, I forgot. There's that guy named Steph.
Yeah, they're just busy winning 70 games again.
It's going to be really hard for those five to not be on the first team All-NBA, depending on how those spots line out. But Giannis has been something we've talked about time and time again. Malcolm Brogdon as a strong rookie of the year contender. It is a down year for rookies, no dispute, but that would be a fun thing, a nice feather in Milwaukee's cap, and sort of the reemergence of Chris Middleton. There was a big feature on him in The Ringer, even though he has struggled lately. It's nice to see him getting some positive pub as well. And the Bucks are going to be fine going forward, even without Jabari Parker. That's sort of the revelation I've experienced in the latter part of the season. They don't necessarily need Jabari to be an elite team, because the way they've played lately, you figure if they have Chris Middleton all year, you have to think to yourself, that's a team that could be a top four team in the East, which has always been my personal goal for that team. Saying that as somebody who clearly doesn't research much about them, as he should, but always I've thought that's the moment they arrive, not when they're just getting into the playoffs with one of the bottom seeds. Now, as a 6 seed or a 5 seed, if some things fall their way, they could easily win that first round playoff series, which is another one of those big, big goals, big stepping stones that they have yet to achieve since 2001, right? So I'd really like to see that personally as a fan. But that's not as big to me as being a top four seed when they legitimately then have a chance to advance all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals and the Finals. That would be the big step.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously a lot there. So they haven't, starting at the end, you're correct. They haven't won a playoff series since 2001. Not only have they just not been in the Eastern Conference Finals where they were in 01, they haven't won a playoff series, period. Being a six seed is good. It's a lot better than being seven or eight because right now, you do not want to face Cleveland, and Boston is a bit of a weird thing. Some people aren't scared of them in the NBA. Some people are. Their record against basically playoff teams or any teams with winning records is actually really bad. I don't think they have a single win against anybody with a winning record, if I'm correct, in the East maybe. So that's obviously causing a lot of people some concern, either side of the argument. And Toronto, the Bucks have never played well against, at least the last 5 years. And Washington, they haven't this year. Personally, I'm not as scared of them. I don't know that much about them. Maybe that's why. But they're pretty locked into their seeds, though. Toronto, I think, is three. Washington is four. The only way the Bucks can get up to the fifth seed, in which case they would face Washington, they would need to win their finale, which I believe is at Boston. And then the Hawks, Atlanta Hawks, would need to lose both of their remaining games. I think it's Charlotte at home tonight. So Charlotte's on the back end of a back-to-back. And then I think at Indiana, if I'm not mistaken. A lot of things need to go their way to get the five. So they're pretty much locked into being the sixth seed against Toronto, which all in all is not a terrible assignment. And when you consider, if we're just talking about, like, is this Bucks season growth? Is this a good thing? Is it a successful season? I think even if they don't win a playoff series, which is such an easy goal to shout out there, it's something that is such a tangible measure of success that a lot of people have wanted. I still think even if they don't win, I still think you can potentially call it a success because of Giannis took that next step, that mystical, always talked about cliche thing called the next step. Giannis took it this year. Giannis went from being a good player into the realm of a superstar, and not just being an all-star. He became one of the superstars of the game. He really did. He's not a top, we just talked about it. He's not a top five player yet, but he is absolutely in that discussion. And so I think you talk about the growth of Giannis. You talk about the return, the successful return of Chris Middleton. We didn't know what this was going to be at the start of the year.
Not at all. Not at all.
You know, it happened in training camp, and we thought he was going to be out the entire year. Maybe he could be back for the playoffs. Turns out he came back way early, even before the All-Star break. And not only did he come back, but it was a success. And I think they've done all of this without Jabari. And like you said, we now know that they can be a good team without him. And the emergence of Malcolm Brogdon as a role player, and I mean that in the most positive sense, that he can be a role player for this team going forward. So I think no matter what happens, you can pretty much guarantee that this was a success. And a first-round playoff victory would just be even more icing on top of that cake.
As you look at this team going forward, do you think that this is basically the roster we're going to see going forward? And obviously there's some core pieces that aren't going to move, but I know there's been some frustration with Dellavedova over the course of the year. Dellavedova, I don't know if people are happy with what they've gotten out of Mirza Teletovic. I think he fills the role perfectly, but I know there's uncertainty around what Greg Monroe is going to do going forward, if he'll opt in for this third year, if the Bucks will want to keep him. I mean, he's been, I think, unquestionably a huge part of what they have going on, given the fact that he's willing to come off the bench and contribute like he does. So I wonder what you think of, do you think that this team at this point is just a tweak here, a tweak away, or there's still a reliance on, okay, it doesn't matter who the roster is, there still needs to be, the key pieces are the guys who have to get better to lead this team into that top four sphere, namely Chris Middleton, Jabari, if he's healthy and comes back, maybe even a little bit of Giannis, maybe a little bit of I don't know, Brogdon, I guess. I mean, I feel like Brogdon isn't going to get a whole lot better. He's delivering on a level no one expected at this point. So ultimately the question is, what has to happen before this team goes from where they are now to being one of the best teams in the East, truly one of the best teams?
Yeah, I would think that's an interesting question because a lot of their roster is pretty set for at least next year.
Right, right.
And a little bit the year after that. They get some flexibility there. But without having it their roster actually in front of me, you mentioned the pieces that they have going forward. I mean, it's Giannis, Jabari, and Middleton. Jabari is going to have some questions with the qualifying offer and the rookie extension and everything like that. And, you know, we have no idea how he's going to come from this injury. No idea at all. So he's an interesting case, but he's still somebody that you want on your team. I mean, the last thing you want is for him to be hurting you when he's playing for somebody else. So, like, you've identified, you know, those three, at least, to work around. Brogdon's not going anywhere just because he just started.
Rookie deal, right.
Yeah, absolutely. John Henson, don't forget, he signed a long-term deal. Toledovich and Dellavedova, I think, each signed three-year deals. Mm-hmm. Monroe has the option for next year. I mean, there's, on the one hand, they've established a lot and who they want here long-term. On the other hand, there's still a ton of pieces that are going to leave. And then, since you're probably not maxing out Jabari this summer, you're still going to have a little bit of money to spend. And with every win that the Bucks make, especially in the playoffs and with this new arena coming and the new practice facility, with all that happening, Milwaukee gets a little bit more attractive of a destination for free agents every year. And kind of like the Brewers, you can build from within and just get most of your roster done. But then you just need those one or two either signings from free agency or from a trade that'll get you over the top. So I think largely the roster is intact, but that's not going to stop them from going for it once it's time.
Striking to me how we will ultimately look back on the Jabari injury, what the context will be, because what you said is true. It could be a huge blessing in disguise in terms of dollar amount. You know, they wouldn't have to pay this guy who could be still a superstar, although I think expectations are tempered after two ACL injuries, but he could still be a superstar that you wouldn't have to pay right away, and you can build this team up even more, not having that contract in the way. Or we could look back on it and say, well, the Bucks, they never did end up getting into the top four of the Eastern Conference. You have to wonder it's a big what if. Would they have been one of the best teams if they could have gotten Jabari healthy? Because really, you're at a point now where they're not going to get another lottery pick, at least not unless something goes horribly wrong. They're past that. They're not at a point where they're going to just be able to draft a superstar. They've got their guys, the big ones, and now it's about sort of fashioning the roster here and there to fill needs and whatnot. So, you know, I'm fascinated to know in 5 years, as we look back at Jabari Parker's second knee injury, what the context will be. It could go any number of directions.
Yeah, I mean, let's say realistically that they have, what, four of their starting five basically locked in for, let's say, 2 years from now. Assuming that Brogdon continues to be kind of the guy for them and continues to grow even just a little bit, like you mentioned, if you have Brogdon, Middleton, Parker, Giannis, you know, then you're just supplementing with one extra piece. And if you have Monroe or Henson off the bench, you know, then you're not doing too bad. So they just need continued growth. This is what I'll say with the Brewers coming up too, once we switch, is that, you know, David Stearns has always been so vague about his goals for this team and what he will determine his progress. And the reason is because if you win 85 games, but it's because Matt Garza wins 18 of them, and because, you know, Ryan Braun is your best player and nobody else is close, it's pretty meaningless. You could have a better season if you win 60 games, but Jonathan Villar, Orlando Arcia, and Keon Broxton all take steps forward to becoming major league players. You know, that's more meaningful of a season. And same with the Bucks, that you need to have those players continue to take growth because that's the future of your franchise.
Yeah, here's the funny thing. We are almost 20 minutes into this conversation, and we have not said the words Thon Maker yet. There's a total wild card. We talked about, I just said, well, they don't need any more stars. Well, they may have one waiting on the bench, waiting to see his moment through, because I don't think anybody still knows what's going to happen with that guy. It has not been disappointing what they've seen out of him thus far. Obviously, still a work in progress, but there are some serious flashes of hope there that he could be something more than just a guy who's helping this team into the next sphere.
Yep, and the nice part is it kind of looks like they were right, too, in holding him back and staying patient with him and letting his growth determine his playing time, which is nice.
Definitely,
to see.
Definitely. We will talk about the Brewers. Right now, let's get to a little hockey conversation. I know we talked a lot about that two podcasts ago with Nicole Hazy, who covers women's hockey, talking about the dispute between the women's hockey team and USA Hockey that was resolved. The women did play in the World Championships in Michigan last week. They did win the gold medal. Brianna Decker, who I believe was tied for the team lead in points at the tournament. I think she had, I want to say three goals, nine assists, but that might be that might not be quite right. I think she had 12 or 13 points overall. So she was a big part of it. Has been a big fixture for the national team, and got a chance to catch up with her, get her thoughts on the dispute, on the play at the World Championships, the state of girls hockey in Wisconsin, a lot of fun things. So give a listen to this. Brianna Decker, Dousman native, U.S. women's hockey team. My guest is Brianna Decker. She is a member of the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team. They just won gold at the IIHF Women's World Championships won over Canada in dramatic fashion, and that all coming on the heels of a dispute with USA Hockey that was in the news and definitely drew the attention to women's hockey. They've got 10 months to go before the Olympics begin in Pyeongchang, so they are going to be gearing up for what's to come now. And that's actually my first question, Brianna, because I'm curious how the schedule works for you now. You guys just won the big battle with Canada, won the gold medal there. Is it full stop headed into the Olympics now? Do you have other things that you're going to be working on before getting back together with the national team? Like, what's the schedule like for the next 10 months?
Yeah, I think right now we have tryouts coming up soon for the Olympics. And once their team is finalized, probably like middle of summer, beginning of summer here, and we'll get centralized together as a group come August. And we'll be together for 5 months or 5 or 6 months or so before leading up to Korea.
We're talking to you, obviously, because you have connections to the area. You grew up in the Kettle Moraine School District, went to high school, prep school out in Minnesota. But I know you still consider yourself a Wisconsinite, I'm sure. Do you get a chance to come home at all in the interim here? I know you said you're on Eastern Coast or East Coast time zone right now. Are you going to get a chance to come home, or is it pretty much training the whole way through?
Yeah, I try to make it home at least once a summer for about a week or so, whether I come back and work at camp up in the Green Bay area or, get home to my parents and visit my parents and my brothers for a bit. But no, it's pretty much all training from here on out, basically spending most of my time in Boston right now.
So we'll get into the labor dispute a little bit here, but as a lot of people know, there was really only like a 2 to 3 day window after the agreement was struck between the women's national team and USA Hockey before you guys had to play. I don't know how what was that like? I mean, I'm guessing you guys didn't just put on skates 2 days before the thing and get going. I'm sure you guys were still training to some degree, but I don't know if it was in the cards that you guys would be able to win the whole thing, having only a couple days heads up. What is that interim period like, especially as we get closer to the point where it looks like a deal is going to happen, but it isn't a done deal? How did that all work for you guys?
Yeah, we were supposed to have pre-camp about 10 days prior to the tournament. But, yeah, we were, we had a little bit of disagreement with our USA Hockey and whatnot, and I'm glad we finally came to an agreement a couple of days prior to the tournament. But it didn't stop our training. We all knew we had to continue to train hard. There's about, 7 or 8 of us out in Boston that train together who are on the national team, so that helps out a lot. But all of us were prepared to compete at our best at the World Championships, and we proved that throughout the tournament.
First game of the tournament is against Canada, and I think anybody who follows this knows that U.S. and Canada are the two major players right now in world women's hockey. You get that first goal of that game. All eyes are on this match because all eyes have been on the dispute between the women's hockey team and USA Hockey, and you guys come in there and you score first. You get to score that first goal. Had to be an emotional moment for your team, had to be an emotional moment for you. Take me through the goal a little bit and just what that moment was like.
Yeah, I remember it obviously pretty well. It was a very emotional time for our team. I think we just had so many emotions going into the tournament, but the dispute kind of brought us together. We felt kind of unbreakable heading into the tournament, and we knew nothing was going to stop us. But that first goal to get under our belt, it was awesome. Megan Bozek kind of came down the far side, and I knew what she was going to do. I played against her growing up, and I played against her in college as well. She went to Minnesota, and I went to Wisconsin, so I knew her tendencies, but that's the best part about playing with your teammates on the U.S. team. Everybody's at their top game, and you know people pretty well. So I knew what she was going to do, and I just kind of planted myself back door to tap the puck in.
So jumping back to the dispute, I guess I don't even know, is the terminology, were you guys officially on strike? Is that a good way to put it, or was it just a stand? Like, I guess, what would be the terminology you guys were using?
I guess the terminology everybody was kind of using was a boycott. Just basically, we were just kind of sticking up for ourselves for what we believe was the right thing for us and what we deserve. But like I said, it was awesome that we came to an agreement with USA Hockey. I think it's just now we're going to be moving forward together, and it's huge for not only just our sport and women's hockey, but it's just for women in general to stand up for what they think is right and what they should deserve.
on paper, it seems like, I know when you get a compromise like this, it's usually both sides have to give a little bit. On paper, it looks really good from an outsider's point of view for the players that you guys got a massive increase in compensation, which a lot of people have focused on. I know there's a lot of other elements that maybe don't get the focus, like maternity benefits. I know when we spoke to Nicole Hazy on the podcast a couple weeks ago, there was a effort to try to get more games throughout the course of the year so that you guys could spend more time as a team together. What were, outside of the compensation aspect, what were some of the elements that the players really felt strongly about that they did get? And is it fair to say that you guys pretty much got everything you were hoping to get, or most everything you were hoping to get?
Yeah, we got mostly everything that we were hoping to get. Obviously, yeah, we had to meet halfway with something. But I think just being treated fairly in regards to kind of what the men get, what we would like to get, maybe not from a compensation standpoint, but just from whether it's traveling or expenses per day, just things like that we wanted to focus in on to have it be fair for us. So it was a good step forward for us, and I'm really happy that the outcome was what it was.
One of the elements that made this work so well was the inability of them to find replacement players. Nobody was saying yes that they would play with the main team sitting out. And I don't know how that's possible. Like, that sort of solidarity is the type of thing that you just don't see. It's just very difficult when you know, personal interest comes to the forefront. So how do you think that worked? Was that a concerted effort to get the word out and get people on board understanding what was happening? Or was that just the way that the women's hockey community is and they embrace the concept?
Yeah, I think, the women's hockey community is pretty tight-knit. Everybody knows everybody. So it was, It was, you know, we obviously use social media as a huge push for all of that, and I think that's what helped bring this all together is women hockey players. But it was a pretty exciting stressful moment. But I was just glad to be able to put it behind us heading into World Championship.
I when we spoke to Nicole Hazy, she kind of broke down some of the things that I wouldn't have realized, or the average person doesn't realize, is if the U.S. had gone in with replacement players and not done well, it could have had lasting impacts on their international competition, sort of the level that they'd be playing at. She explained it similar to some overseas soccer leagues, how you can be at a certain level and drop down if you don't meet certain requirements. And I don't know if that's realistic, if that really could have happened to the U.S. hockey team. But then you have the added issue of, I mean, let's say they find replacement players, that could be it for players on the world team. Like, they conceivably, U.S. hockey could just move on. I mean, that's sort of a doomsday scenario, but I imagine there's a little more risk than people even realize to take a stand like this as far as your personal careers go. I mean, theoretically, it could have caused a permanent severance with USA Hockey, right?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was how much we were putting on the line. You know, we have a lot of girls, like, I'm a little younger, so hopefully I have a longer future with USA Hockey, but there's a lot of players who are older than me who this was their last, this is potentially their last tournament. So that was one thing that was unbelievable to me to see, is that we've had so many girls on our team who were willing to give up all that just to make a statement and move forward with USA Hockey and get what we deserve. So I think that was, I give a lot of credit to a lot of the older players on our team who were willing to do that.
You've already mentioned how big a deal that is for all female athletics, women's athletics. And then sort of late in the game, and I'm kind of curious how you feel about this, there was discussion that maybe the men's team would boycott as well if USA Hockey didn't capitulate to what the women's team was looking for. I wonder if that's a little conflicting, because first of all, as we found out since then, the NHL players are not going to be competing in the Olympics, so there's a little bit of clout loss there. And then on top of it, here's something that you guys have been fighting for and working hard toward, and you've got this great solidarity going, and then the men speak up all of a sudden, or somebody on behalf of the men, whether or not we even know that would have happened, they speak up, and then all of a sudden everyone who isn't patched in says, oh, well, that's a done deal, right? The men won't play, that's it. I mean, is it a little conflicting because you guys have, you know, you had your movement already making positive momentum and didn't maybe need that? Or is it just, I mean, you just got to take it for what it is, another show of solidarity and something that you guys could use to your advantage?
Yeah, it kind of was what it was. I mean, we don't know how many of the guys really stated that as well. But it was good to have a lot of their support. I know a lot of the guys who I played at Wisconsin or any of those guys that I grew up with, or people I know from just playing USA Hockey. They were in support of us, and a lot of them have trained with us out in Boston or whatnot. And so that was awesome that they had our backs with stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's as far as in the NHL guys not going to the Olympics, it's a disappointment. I think I really enjoy watching the top guys at the world class stage, but it's hard to. It is what it is, and it's a decision that the NHL made. So.
Another former University of Wisconsin player, Hillary Knight, she gets the game winner in overtime to beat Canada in the championship match. What's that moment like? I know you were, I believe you were right on the ice. I think you were the first one to greet her after she scored the winning goal. What was that moment like for you?
Yeah, it was incredible. You know, Hillary Knight is just like a knack for the net and pressured situations. I knew that the puck needed to be on her stick in order for us to probably have a good chance of winning. So, yeah, we're playing on the line. And we've been playing together on the U.S. team for the last 3 years or so. So we know each other pretty well, and it was awesome to see her fire that in there. Incredible shot by one of the best in the world.
Does this event serve as a pretty good preview for Pyeongchang? Can I expect that it would be the similar team, similar rosters, or is there going to be enough change that this is really, you'd really have to throw these results out the window as you look forward? Or does this make you guys kind of, I mean, momentarily the favorite? Or, I know you're kind of right there with Canada anyway, but what does this say about what's to come?
Yeah, I think it'll be probably similar rosters and whatnot heading into Pyeongchang, but also there's drills that come along and things can get shaken up a little bit. There's also a lot of power feed and a lot of training to be done prior to 2018 Olympics. So we'll see what the future holds. Hopefully everything goes as well as it did this tournament.
So last thought, looking at the state of Wisconsin, it's clearly the girls' hockey and boys' hockey, for that matter, is not at the level that you see in Minnesota or other states in the Midwest. Is there anything that can be done, you think, to enhance the game of girls' hockey in Wisconsin? Will there ever come a point where we can see some elite players in the high school programs, or maybe if they start more club programs? I mean, is that something that could happen in one or two steps, or are we just like miles and miles away from that being a reality?
No, I think we're right on the edge there. I think with growing the game that much more in Wisconsin, I think it'll be great if we had some of the girls from our generation who are playing on the U.S. team, you know, whether it's me or Alex Ritchie or mm-hmm. any of the girls around the Wisconsin area, come back and support the programs around Wisconsin. Obviously, I haven't decided what I'm going to be doing yet with that, but it would be great for us to, you know, reflect and be able to get back to Wisconsin to help increase the sports around the area.
Well, thank you very much, Brianna Decker, Dousman native. She's got a silver medal from the Olympics in her pocket. She's got a gold medal from the World Championships in her pocket, and will be a big piece of the puzzle going forward. Congratulations on everything that you guys have accomplished this year, both on and off the ice, and good luck going forward.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks to Brianna Decker for joining the podcast. Always nice when we have an Olympian on the podcast, JP. I'm not sure we've done that before, so pretty sweet right there.
Quickly raking my memory banks, and I don't find one. I thought I was as close as we were going to get, but we'll have to settle for her.
I did talk to some people who competed in the U.S. Olympic trials that were alternates in the Olympics, so they are closer than you are. So I would say that you are not close as we would have gotten.
You're so negative. You're so negative.
I am. You're so negative. Good comeback. Let's talk about the Brewers. They're a week into the season. They are bad. This is not something that would have been in dispute before the season. I'm wondering, just real quickly, two or three takeaways, because we've talked about things to look forward to, which is not many. You mentioned it when we were talking about the Bucks there, about sort of the young players developing is sort of the key to this season, and I would completely agree with that. Two or three takeaways that the first week of the season has, that you have, whether it's informed your perception of the team, if there's just nothing that we can glean from those first seven games, how do you feel about it?
Number one, Ryan Braun. Number two, Jonathan Villar. Number three, Willy Peralta. I would say those are my three things. To see Ryan Braun show his two home run power, I think is great. And he has some other hits, which is great. And I think the fact that he has already had a scheduled off day is also very telling, because they had, that would be, what is that, seven games in a matter of 8 days, and they sat him for one of them already. Now, they're going to have, I think it's 17 in a row starting Tuesday night. So I understand that there's a clump of games coming up, But to already sit him on, I think it was day three, maybe day four. Yeah, it was day four because it was their day game with Colorado. That was, I don't want to say troubling, more disappointing. So Ryan Braun is number one. Jonathan Villar is number two. To see him continually making outs when he shouldn't be making outs and not making outs when he should be making outs.
When he makes contact, he just swings and misses at everything.
Yeah, so, and also, defensively, of not making outs when he should be making other people get out. And we saw this last year. He started a little bit slow last year where we were kind of wondering the same thing, and he finished strong, so you do give him the benefit of the doubt, but you would have thought that a lot of this would have been corrected, and that, you know, even despite switching positions, that we would still see more growth out of him. So that would be takeaway number two. Takeaway number three is Willie Peralta. It's only been one start. Tuesday night is his second of the season, but it is important to get somebody like that right and get him on the right track if he is going to be on this team in the near future. So good to see at least just one start of his looking pretty good.
I think the thing we've learned with Braun is just how aggressive they're going to be giving those days off. And I don't know if that disappoints me or not. I guess as a fan it does, but in reality it's more just something that makes some sense. But to see it so early in the season tells you, yeah, they are going to give him days off left and right. He is just not going to be a regular. He's not going to be a guy who starts 15, 16 games in a row. That's just not going to happen. I think the results speak for themselves, though. Usually when they do these, you know, they do rest him. Yep. He hits the ball like mad. He's incredible. He made a great defensive catch in the outfield already. That is something that strikes me. He also sat out a game because he had some back issues. So despite the day off, he's had two of these starts he has missed in the first seven games. My thing with VR is that maybe I took it for granted that a move from shortstop to second base would not be super smooth. I figured it would be really smooth. I thought that would be the lesser of the two positions, and I think it is. It's just he clearly isn't there yet, and that's not a big deal. I think he'll probably rebound just fine. But the defense in general was really bad in the first homestand. I thought Jett Bandy did not do well defensively as a catcher, and I think that's kind of what he's brought here to do. And he does have a good throwing arm and a good release and everything, but he just let balls in the dirt get to the backstop. He ran into a fielder on a clunky pop-up. I thought the outfield defense was bad. I saw both Kirk Neuenhuis and Domingo Santana just not make good plays on fly balls. And we're talking about a small sample of plays, but it's a little discouraging that I would say the same things that haunted this team last year are clearly still in play. And that is swings and misses at a lot of pitches and poor, porous defense. And the pitching isn't good enough to make up for that. Now, by far the thing that encouraged me the most, you said Willie Peralta. Well, I look at Jimmy Nelson, man. That start was gold for a guy who needs desperately some starts in a row that are quality. And that is just one start as well, but he used his changeup a lot more than he did last year. Very encouraged that he feels more comfortable with that pitch and has commanded that pitch. And I am not off the train that I think Jimmy Nelson is not going to help this team going forward, but hard not to be excited about that. Certainly Willie Peralta too, picking up on the momentum he had last year. Very, very cool to see that. And then I'm just cheering for Jesus Aguiar because he's a folk hero and I just am cheering for him as well as Eric Thames.
Because he's fat.
He's fat and his name is Jesus. I love it. And then Eric Thames, whose arms could crush small nations. He is fun to watch. He's had a really good start. I think he could be a folk hero too when it's all said and done. He's also probably going to go through some bad stretches once they figure him out a little bit. There isn't a big book on him, but
and
I love him.
It's for me, I always forget that he's on a 3-year deal. It's not like he's just one of these stopgaps. Like he's here for a while. So for me, bottom line is that week sucked. There are going to be more weeks that suck, but anybody who's jumping off a bandwagon, as I've seen on the Twitter, is crazy.
The thing that frustrates me more than anything is listening to fans talk about the rebuild like it has a set structure, like it has to be. First of all, I don't really know why this part bothers me, but the rebuild is not in its, I heard someone on radio say in its second year, it's just starting its second year. The rebuild began when they traded Yovani Gallardo. I mean, this has already been three or four years really in motion. The Houston Astros trade that brought Domingo Santana, Adrian Hauser, Josh Hader, and Brett Phillips. That was still under Doug Melvin. That was before David Stearns took over. So the rebuild was underway then. This is not something that had to, you know, officially began, a gavel sounded, and the rebuild began last year. And then the more important thing is, I don't understand the ability of people to put actual deadlines on when they're going to be great. Like, well, it's going to be another 5 to 7 years. If it's that long...
And then base their fandom off of that.
Well, right, exactly. If it's going to be 5 to 7 years, that means they don't think any of the current pieces in the organization are going to be part of it. And I think that's ridiculous. Either they're teenagers or they haven't been brought into the Brewers yet. Well, that's not a rebuild. That's praying, because they don't even know who these players are. There are guys in this organization. There are enough good guys in the minor leagues that could make a very good Major League Baseball team. I'm holding on to 2018 as a competitive year. I think it's going to happen sooner than people think. I certainly wouldn't project playoffs or anything, but I think it could be 2018, 2019. If it isn't, that's the way it goes. There's going to be a lot of bumps in the road between here and there. Now, you can't say when this is going to be done, and at the same time, don't think it's going to be forever from now. I mean, 5 years from now, if they aren't good, that's a problem. No team wants to sit on the sidelines for that long, so you just got to let the blob take shape. You can't expect that things are going to fall in line within year windows. I mean, things could click at any number of times.
Well, and it's just, you have to be a blob among the rest of the blobs, because that's all you can do. I mean, there's no guarantees in this. I mean, the fact that the Cubs actually did it and did it quickly, I mean, that's the anomaly. Look at the Astros. Like, look at their rebuilding process, and they're not any closer than they were 2, 3, and even 10 years ago. You know, they're in the playoffs, sure, but there's no guarantees in this. You just have to do it the right way, according to what basically everybody in baseball thinks is the right way, and that's what the Brewers are doing. They're stockpiling a lot of talent, not just for one wave either. You know, they are stockpiled at AAA, AA, single A, and low A. You know, they are constantly acquiring assets, as this Stearns will call it.
Yes, and I don't want anyone to talk about Ryan Braun anymore and say that the PEDs and the contract make him difficult to move. I mean, maybe in some ways they do to certain teams, but the PED thing is so far in the rearview mirror at this point. And look at contracts given to guys like Johnny Peralta, just as one example off the top of my head, Nelson Cruz. That is not scaring major league teams. It's not. And maybe they worry about him being a nice guy. I personally think all you have to do is go back and look at the last 2 to 3 years of his track record to know that the guy is not a terrible guy. So I don't know. If anybody's scared away by that, I think that's foolish, and I don't think it's happening. Second of all, that contract is not bad anymore. Look at his peers that are doing what he's doing, and look at what they get paid. I promise you, Ryan Braun is going to be seen as a bargain to some markets. I think a bargain is a stretch, but he is market value. So the only reason Ryan Braun hasn't been traded is because the Brewers don't feel that they've gotten a deal that is proportional to his value yet. And I still think he could be a part of the next great Brewers team, because I think it's 1 or 2 years away, and I don't think Ryan Braun is going anywhere in the next 1 or 2 years. Yep. So,
and they came real close to trading him already.
Exactly. Maybe they do trade him, but I just don't want people to think that that is something that the Brewers are hamstrung by. They're not hamstrung by the Ryan Braun situation. It's a very nice situation. They've got a phenomenal player, and if somebody comes along and offers a king's ransom, he'll be gone, and they'll add those pieces to the rebuild.
You're a fan of Ryan Braun's situation, are you?
I am a fan of the Ryan Braun situation.
Yeah. Plus, I think he only made $1 million the year that he won MVP. It was either 1 or 4, and I think it was 1. So there's nothing wrong with paying this guy back a little bit.
Yes, that doesn't make fans feel any better, but it's true that in baseball, it's a young player's game like every major sport, and then those guys get paid pennies relative to their veteran counterparts, and then they get paid in the back end to do not as much as they did when they were young, but that's sort of the structure.
Brian Rizzo is still close to the major league minimum.
I'm not sure about Rizzo. I think Bryant is.
Really.
Yeah, well, and whatever. I don't want to go down the salary rabbit hole. I mean, teams do try to sort of now fill in the gap a little bit and give them more than they would be required to give them. But yeah, it's definitely, they're definitely not making as much as they could be right now.
All right. So what'd you write about in that old newspaper this week?
Ah, the old newspaper. She's still there, JP. People think the ship is sinking, but we're still there. I had a column. I talked to Steve Showalter on last week's podcast, wrote my Preps Alcove column about his watching his son at Madison Square Garden hit one of the more memorable shots in Badgers history, and a little about Zach's recruitment, and then Steve's season as the coach at Menominee Falls. They had kind of a crazy finish as well, and talking a little bit about his move from the college ranks to Catholic Memorial for a few days before jumping over to Menominee Falls in the off season. That was a hot button story. So wrote my Preps Alcove about that. The All Suburban Boys basketball team has been released to the wild. John Diener of Cedarburg is our boys Player of the Year. His dad, Tom Diener, is our Coach of the Year. The girls' team came out last week. You'll see our Player of the Year there, who is Kenzie Schmitz of Germantown, and our Coach of the Year, Bob Mirande, who led Cudahy to the state championship game. So check that out at Lake Country Now, Lake Country Now, or MyCommunityNow.com. Actually, MyCommunityNow.com is where to go. Lake Country, we won't have that. That's not our area for the all-suburban team, but all our 12 picks for the boys and the girls' teams are all there.
There's a player on the Milwaukee Admirals who stands 5'6".
That is shorter than me.
He is 7 inches shorter than the average player on the Admirals.
Is it Cliff Ronning?
It is Tyler Kelleher, and they just signed him from the University of New Hampshire. He was a college free agent, and he's getting a little dip into the AHL talent pool right now. So you can catch a story on him on Sports Weekly tonight, as well as a preview of the Timber Rattlers season with a lot of big Brewers names on that roster. And then there's a movie producer from Kenosha who just made what is being called one of the best golf movies ever made, a movie called Tommy's Honor, that opens on Friday, about old Tom Morris and young Tom Morris over in Scotland. And Jim Kreitzer is the movie producer from Kenosha, so he stopped into our studio to talk about it. It's awesome. It was really cool.
That is super interesting. I will have to tune in for that. It reminds me of another story we do have at LakeCountryNow.com, written by Kelly Smith, because, as people know, golf is in the news. U.S. Open is coming to Wisconsin. It's the next major on the docket now that the Masters is done. LaBelle Golf Club in Oconomowoc has some pretty cool U.S. Open history. Two guys were teaching pros there that won the U.S. Open. In fact, they won them a ton. They gave a combined 6 U.S. Open titles between them. The only guy to win 3 in a row is a guy by the name of Willie Anderson, and he was the teaching pro at LaBelle in Oconomowoc. They were originally from Scotland, I believe, but they have a lot of time over here, and at the turn of the century won some U.S. Open. So tons of history at LaBelle, celebrating the past there and how those guys walked the course. So check that out at LakeCountryNow.com. I think you'll really like it. I really enjoyed reading it.
Beautiful. Well, once again, you have proven wrong on everything, and I feel a lot better about my opinions now, so thank you very much.
JP, if it didn't come back to you and what you thought, it wouldn't be the Initial Reaction Podcast.
Yet you keep calling me.
I do, because you never return my calls, so I gotta be proactive, my friend.
All right. Take care. See ya.
Have a good week.